So I promised David an outline. And so the outline is in the chat room. It's very brief. And we're exploring monkey mind. I've been wanting to explore this topic for a really long time because I always say that the best personal work you can ever do is have a healthy relationship with fear. And I think that I want to put on par with the list is getting to know your mind and having a healthy relationship with it. I would say those are the two practices that if you take time to go on these explorations, then your life just gets so much easier. And the outline is in the chat room, like I just said. What we're going to do is get to know our minds by exploring a Dogen Zenji quote one line at a time. And this is a journey to dissect our relationship with our own minds as a way to transcend it. In order to experience something bigger than it, then we're going to come back in the end to including it, but in a new way that seems very different. So our lives are all about the mind. I think, therefore, I am. In society, we're trained and rewarded for focus, purpose, understanding, and this is all really good stuff. But we're not trained and rewarded for spaciousness or spiritual emptiness, which is even better stuff. So, as a result of our training, we live in our minds, and our minds take in a ton of detail and just chatters on and on. And what we do all day long, every day, is listen to it, and we get locked in our minds. And oddly, even though this is our whole world, we don't really even know it. And it's kind of like we're hypnotized by it. And most of what it says is meaningless. It's just like a cyclical internal narration that has little impact on pretty much anyone but you, to the point where the real cause of our problems is not life itself, but the commotion that your mind makes about life. And the analogy that I came up with is like we're in the ocean struggling. And the reason why we're struggling is because we're on the surface of the ocean and there's all these waves coming in. You know, the waves of our mind, our thoughts, and they keep hitting us. And we're not taught how to swim or even float. And so we're literally drowning in thoughts. And it's so much our reality. We get so close to it that we forget that we are not it, that we are not this struggle, that we are not these thoughts and these waves. It's like we are the ones that are experiencing the thoughts and the waves. And that's why I thought this would be a great topic. So, I like to talk openly about my own life, and it's definitely going to be a lot easier to talk about my own life with Amy here as the moderator instead. The last year, of course, as you guys know, I'm going through an unexpected divorce, and it's been super painful. My experience has been that I have, like my CEO, I always talk about CEO, I have become my mind. I'm just in my head all the time, probably up till about a month ago. And that was my whole reality. And it was such a difficult experience. It's like my head felt so heavy. I started developing vertigo. There's actually I don't know if it's a koan, but it's a saying in Zen, like a master saying to a student, look at the stone. And he's holding a stone in the palm of his hand. And he asked the student, is the stone inside your mind or outside your mind? And the student thought about it and he's looking at the stone. He's like, well, it's inside my mind. I'm thinking about the stone. And then the master says, your mind must be very heavy then. So my mind was just clogged and so heavy. It's like I was walking around with just this bowling ball on my neck for the last year. And so it was making me sick. It was all I knew. And so that's what happens when we are just completely lost in our minds. And I know you guys know what I'm talking about because when we go through suffering, that's kind of what tends to happen. Because we're in such a dualistic state when we're in our minds, like that's good, that's bad, this is right, this is wrong. We're trying to interpret things. It's like it causes so much suffering. And then we're in resistance to it. And then there's just so much unhappiness found in it. It's like I'm surrounded by this beautiful world, and yet all I'm experiencing is my mind. I would literally go for bike rides up Little Cottonwood Canyon, and my mind would just be churning, 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 churning. And it would be a horrible experience. My body would be happy, but I, Kristen, would be just in my head, and I was just ignoring my body and the happiness there and the expansive state that came from the bike ride. And I just monkey mind out the whole way up. There's a lot of stress. Even with the thought, like the positive thoughts that I would have in the last year, I want to be amazing. I want to recover from this beautifully. I'm better than this, right? This is seeped in stress, like wanting to move on from it. So Zen practice, of course, which is what we're here to explore, is like meditation, or with my teacher teaching voice dialogue, and my teacher, and actually what I tend to do a lot with clients, is help them access no mind states or something beyond the mind. So we learn how to transcend it through these practices. And in a moment, I'm going to ask you how it's going. Like, if you have a practice, I don't know if you meditate, like, have you had experiences besides your own mind or not? And before I have you answer that question, I just want to tell you that I haven't, not much in the last year. There have been maybe 10 times, and they're very memorable. And even if I have a minute of a moment outside of my own mind, outside of that bowling ball I've been carrying around, it's life-changing and it feeds my soul. And so I just want to answer the question that I'm going to ask you soon, which is, how are you doing? How am I doing? Well, I've been locked in, and I'm still probably 80% locked in. And the reason why is because I miss my husband so much, and yet I can't have a relationship with him because he doesn't want it. But by keep thinking about him, in my mind, I'm just having conversations with him every single day. That's allowing me to continue a relationship with him, even though he's not here. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's how addicting our minds can get. And that's, you know, the payoff that we get by being in our minds. That's just one example. And it's also the second reason why I wanted to make this our subject tonight. So one of the most important experiences you can have is to study the mind, get to know your mind. And for me, it's really ripe. Like, I'm really ready for our session tonight, and hopefully you are too. I don't know what you have going on in your life, or how much you're in your own monkey mind, which includes thoughts, stories, beliefs, you know, judgments, dualism, all of that, which we're going to go over in just a little bit. But what we're going to do is we're going to study a quote by Dogen Zenji, a very famous Zen master that lived 900 years ago. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. And when I say self, I mean our minds. That's who we see as being ourselves. So to study the Buddha way is to study the mind, is another way to say this. To study the mind is to forget the mind. To forget the mind is to be enlightened by all things. So we're going to go through this one sentence at a time. So let's start by looking at, to study the Buddha way is to study the self, or the mind. And don't get too caught up on the words Buddha way. I don't talk that I teach Buddhism. I teach Zen, which is very different. Zen is actually a cross between, or it started off as a cross between Buddhism and Taoism, you know, in China. And Taoism is like detachment, emptiness, equilibrium with the Tao. It's basically a simple life balanced in harmony with nature. And so basically what we're exploring is harmony with nature. And that's really more along the lines of what I teach versus the Buddha way. So to study harmony in nature is to study the self, or to study the mind. And we're going to study the mind in three segments. First, we're going to get curious and gather more information. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, I have like, oh my God, I have so much to share with you about the mind that I find fascinating. Second, we're going to talk about the mind behind its back. We're going to break into groups, and you're going to get to talk about your own relationship with the mind, what you think of him. And then we're going to get the mind in the same room as you in order to change your perspective and reality. So first, let's get curious. Let's get curious about the function of your mind. Now, do scientists know it? It's definitely one of the great mysteries of the world, but they haven't really been able to figure out that much about it. It remains a great mystery. It's like what we understand about our own minds is like a single grain of sand compared to all the sand on the planet. So how well do you know it? Well, if the scientists don't know it, you might know it a little bit better. At least you know your own mind better, but really, you know, you don't. Like, we know that it makes us stuck. Absolutely. We know that much of our life and reality comes from the mind. It just kind of narrates the world around you. It's like the movie of your life. You're watching, when you watch your mind, you're watching the movie of your life. And notice how much your mind just creates your sense of self, you know, where the beliefs and stories come from. But here's the big question. Notice though, that your mind can also be used as a tool to set you free. It can be used as a tool to set you free. And that's what we're exploring here today. So I've been studying my mind for the last year. I haven't necessarily been in harmony with my own mind in the last year, but I have been observing it. I've been super curious about it. But when you do this, it doesn't necessarily calm it down, nor has it set me free. You know, and in many ways, it's just hypnotized me and ensnared me, but I knew I was conscious about it. So how about you? I'm going to separate you into groups of two right now. And there's going to be a lot of questions that you can talk about. You're only going to have a few minutes each. I don't do voice dialogue in these talks because I find that it doesn't work with a group setting online. It only works with a group setting in person or one-on-one. So I want you to stay as you, and I want you to look at the mind. Instead of me asking to speak to the mind, I want you to just remain and look at the mind. And notice if you want to control your mind, how you can try to control your mind, what kind of advice you've been given to control your mind. I mean, we want to believe that we can control it, right? We can't control the world, but surely we can control our own minds because it's neurotic, right? We could even call it the neurotic mind. I've done the voice of insanity and mind in the same kind of 5 minutes, and it seems very similar. But the question is, though, have you ever really been able to control it? And for how long? I mean, it's kind of a slippery fish, you know? And then you have to wonder, you guys have done enough voice dialogue with me, is that mind okay with being controlled? Nobody really is. So in exploring, in just a little bit with our groups, I just want to give you some more information before you gossip about it behind its back. A lot of perspective, three things in particular, and that's in the outline. First of all, dualism. The mind is very dualistic. Maybe you've heard the term dualism, but what does that even mean? And it's like, ask yourself, have you ever had an emotionally neutral thought? Me neither, right? Like we have fear, we have pain, we have happy, sad, like sad, good, happy, good, pain, bad, right? We are so dualistic, like there's so much judgment that comes in when it comes to our mind because our mind is judgmental. Notice how much judgment plays a role in your career or job. Like I want to do this, but I don't want to do that. You know, I don't like this, but I do like that. Notice how much judgment comes in your relationship with others. You know, I want to hang out with that person. I don't want to hang out with that person. I want to sign up for Kristen's Tuesday classes and I don't want to sign up for this other stuff, right? Notice not even just others being people, but how you judge dogs, cats, right? Good dog, bad dog. I mean, there's never anything wrong with a dog, but sometimes the dog just doesn't behave the way that you like it to behave. And then notice also that you judge yourself. And it reminds me of a story of this guy, Nazardeen. He and his son were walking through the market and behind them, they had their donkey on a leash. And he overhears some of the villagers saying, "Oh, look at that Nazardeen. He doesn't know how to use a donkey." So the next day, he walks through the marketplace and his son is riding on the donkey. And then he hears them gossiping. "Oh, look at that Nazardeen. He coddles that boy." And then the next day, Nazardeen is now riding the donkey through the marketplace. "Oh," they say, "look at that Nazardeen up there on the donkey. You know, cruel to the donkey. He's so full of himself too." And then the next day, he is going through the marketplace and they're both riding the donkey. And then the comments got really bad. It's like the judgments, the dualism, bad, bad, bad. And then the next day, Nazardeen is seen carrying the donkey. That's how the story goes. And this kind of just depicts the judgments that we have. And in many ways, the judgments are not just from other people, but their minds. And then it gets into your own mind, and then you start judging yourself. So, the judgments and the dualism is one of the most fascinating parts of the mind, because it's how it works. And I always laugh when people say, "Oh, I want to be less judgmental." I'm like, "Well, it's another way of saying I don't want to be in my mind, because that's what your mind does. It's very dualistic. It's very judgmental. And so it's like saying I don't want to be human, or I don't want to be in this body. It's very difficult. And so what we say when we want to be less judgmental, or what we actually really want, probably the reason why I wanted to explore this topic tonight, is because we want to find our enlightened minds. We want to find our big mind. Like, I've been talking so far about our small mind, but we want to find our big mind. You know, we want to have an experience of something beyond that mind that I've been talking about. But then kind of the third thing is we have a shitty relationship with our small minds, our neurotic minds, our delusional minds. We could call it a lot of names. Actually, you know, in the time of Buddha, I heard there's no such language as enlightenment or delusion or small or big mind. Like, that didn't exist. The only thing that existed in the time of Buddha, which is quite a while ago, was just sanity and insanity. And you heard me say that I facilitate the voice of insanity in the mind, and it's kind of the same thing. And maybe I facilitated you in those voices in the same 5 minutes. And it's really true. It's like what we're really exploring is our insane mind and getting curious about it. And we want to spend some time with it as a way to get to our sane mind. And so it's like we're pitting the insane mind against the sane mind. We'd rather be in the sane mind, but our true nature is that of insanity. We like to think that we can be sane, but we can't. So the next step, actually, let me just pause. Does anybody have any questions about that? That was kind of an earful. All right, I'm going to continue. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about the mind behind his back. Now that we've gathered a whole bunch of information, I'm going to separate you into groups. And just notice you've been sitting there listening to me speak about the mind, the small mind, wanting to get to the big mind. And as we separate you into groups of two, you're going to have about, let's give it 10 minutes. So 5 minutes each. And I want to have you answer two questions. How about the first question is, do you see your mind as being separate from you? Do you see your mind as being separate from you? And maybe Amy, you could put this in the chat room so that people can remember. Do you see your mind as separate than you? And then the second question is, depending on your answer, if no, I want you to riff. Just why not? Why do you not see your mind as separate? And could you ever possibly see your mind as separate? And what would it take? And then if your answer is yes, you do see your mind as separate, or maybe at least a little bit enough, just notice what kind of job you've given it. Does it protect you? Does it help you like frame things to make you feel better? Like when it's hot, does it say, hey, let's go get a cool drink of water? It like makes you feel like you have a friend. It's like chattering on and guiding you. Or when it's not a friend, you know, what advice have you been given about what to do about all that chattering to calm it down and stop it from being so negative? Maybe perhaps in the middle of the night too, when it's just going crazy and you can't sleep. And just notice also, does it work? And if it's a yes, do you ever have any other experiences besides it? So just to simplify it, two questions. Do you see your mind as separate? And then based on yes or no, just riff off of that. So let's separate into groups. And you're going to have 5 minutes each. So make sure you adjust and give each partner time. Hi, where'd everyone go? Oh, here we go. People are coming back. Glenn, what were you going to tell me before, while we're waiting for everybody to come back?
Oh, I was fly fishing yesterday and the wind was blowing very hard and I got extremely frustrated and pissed. And that's when I started to say, okay, what is going on here? So those are the moments, like you said, about conflict.
Oop, hold on. I'm sorry. Okay. I think that I need to hit end. I think I'm in the wrong room. Hold on.
Yeah. Go to your room.
nope, that's not it. Shit.
Would you dump everybody?
I don't know. Where'd it go?
Did you leave
breakout rooms? How do I get back? Close all rooms. Uh-oh. I don't know what to do.
Okay. Scroll your mouse over the bottom.
All right. Now say what you're, we have 20 seconds. Say what you're going to say. I can pay attention now.
Okay. So I was just giving you an example of how, when I have a tendency to go ahead and become the observer is when I'm massively frustrated or triggered or pissed or something like that. The fly fishing exercise yesterday was futility.
Right. Oh, here we go. Hey.
I'm going to mute.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Found our way home. Sorry if I'm delayed. How was that for you guys?
It was great.
Tell me why.
I got to at least acknowledge my mind as far as the two different roles it plays. And then what was interesting is that Liz, my partner in the room there, the way she views her mind, the way I view my mind, were 180 degrees out. Which I thought was interesting.
Say that last sentence again. 180 degrees out, did you say?
Yeah, Liz, who's here right now, she has a view of her mind and how the mind works with her. And I have a view of my mind, how my mind works with me. But the views that we both have seem to be 180 degrees out of phase. So mine was totally opposite of what hers was.
Yeah, and it was interesting with my partner. He was already transcended the mind, and he started talking about poetry and fly fishing and the place that he gets. And I'm like, man, I am not there. I am so stuck in my monkey mind, my small mind. And he was immediately talking about his big mind, and it both has the word mind in it, but they're just such different realities.
Yeah, yep.
Anybody else want to comment about your mind and where you are with it?
Kristen, so it's Glenda here. Hi, everyone. So for me, it was just, I guess Dave and I were agreeing, you know, that this is such a beautiful practice and that it is almost for split seconds that we can experience that higher mind when we can be in complete stillness. And but yet the rest of the time, it seems like it is just hard. So I can agree with you on that. I think I'm mostly always one with my mind and you know, creating stories.
I feel like just having a conversation about it and like you saying that is, it's like this really speaks to Dogen's quote. Like just even having a conversation about it, we transcend it. It's like we see that we are not it, and then we start to have other experiences besides it, because the second we're in a space of not being it, right, we've transcended it, ironically. You know, when we're talking about it in third person like this, and even when we're talking about how crazy it is, like who is the one that's talking about it? It's not it. Something else. Anybody else?
You know, I think it might be that when I'm in my big mind, that's when I'm one with my mind. And as we were, David and I were discussing, I was saying that my mind was like a voice of reason, but sort of like a school teacher telling me what to do. But when I transcend that, I think I am my mind.
Okay. I'm trying to follow. It seems not clear to me. I mean, here's the thing that's the big picture. There's your mind, and then there's everything else. And when we're observing the mind, we're not the mind. We're everything else or something else. And so I want us to be really, really clear what it is that we're talking about. I mean, there's the brain. Oh, let's actually back up. There's the head. You know, oh, I'm in my head all the time. Well, that's different than saying I'm in my mind all the time. The mind is part of the head. You know, the brain is not a it, it's a we. There's a lot of components to it. The amygdala is part of the brain, but it's not the mind. Then there's the mind, and then there's the small mind, and then there's the big mind. There's thoughts, there's individual thoughts. And so, I mean, it gets really confusing when we're even just having a conversation about mind. What the heck are we even talking about here? And I'm saying the small mind is probably the CEO for most clients that I work with. Not all. It's at least on the board of directors, especially somebody who's struggling a lot. And then there's the big mind, which is a completely different reality that includes the small mind, but isn't it? And so let's just make sure that we're really clear about what it is that we're talking about. And the reason, well, how we can do this is like we're going to get in the same room with this mind next. But right now we've just been gossiping about the mind. I call it a hymn thus far. And I don't know if that changes your perspectives, but I see us trying to understand this. And I don't really think that there's much that we can understand other than we are not it and it is not us. And it's not the only game in town. How does that feel or sound?
That feels appropriate.
That's great.
Yeah, like I started getting lost because I didn't know who was speaking. You know, it sounded to me like Big Mind was answering the question. And it is, and I think that that's what is happening, and I didn't expect this actually. Already, we're living Dogen Zenji's quote. Coming back to that. It's like the second we start observing our mind, we are not it anymore. And this is the space by which things become really clear and our problems diminish and our life starts to make more sense. And this is the thing that I've been chasing for the last year. Or not chasing, but hoping will come in someday and take over again. Anybody else have anything they want to add to that measure? Okay, let's move on. You know, the mind is, for many people, seen as a perceived enemy. And if you're trying to get away from the mind, if you're trying to get rid of the mind, like you can't get rid of your enemy if you won't even spend some time in a room with it or interact with it or have a conversation with it. You know, it'll just chase after you. And so our relationship with our own minds becomes very important. And you guys know me well enough to know that if we run away from it, if we try to resist it in any way, if we ignore it, if we try to let it go, if we try to fight it, if in the middle of the night it's chattering away and we just try to distract ourselves from it, yeah, we might be able to get back to sleep eventually, but then it's just going to yell louder the next night. And it's like any voice ignored or trapped in the basement is going to attract fear, is going to wind up there, anger, depression, greed, hatred. Next thing you know, that mind's going to be delusional, a lot of neurosis, a lot of pathology comes from doing that, suffering, like accelerated judgment, insanity, right? Which I've been living, let me tell you. And it's like, it's not that I've been repressing it and locking in the basement. I've just been letting it run wild, but I've been resenting it at the same time. Conversely, any voice that's in the penthouse suite, yes, even including the voice of insanity, is going to have a lot of fun, like at Burning Man. Like we just take insanity out to play there, and it's going to attract joy and calm and clarity and freedom and self-expression, expansiveness. And oddly, like if you take this insane mind, the delusional mind, and you put it in a penthouse suite or put it on a throne, it will become sane, oddly. And how we get there is we stop trying to understand it. That's the first part. Because if you try to understand your own mind, guess what? You're back in your mind. It's like a computer that's trying to understand itself or reprogram itself. The koan that I'm thinking of is the student came to the teacher and said, I've been working on myself for decades and I still suffer horribly. And my mind is still not at rest. Can you help me put my mind at rest? Teacher thought about it and he said, well, show me your mind and I will put it at rest. 10 days, the student sat in the sun and the rain, you know, night and dark, just trying to grasp his mind, trying to understand it. And finally, he came to the conclusion that it's ungraspable. And he went to his teacher and that's what he said. My mind is ungraspable. And the teacher said, okay, then I have put your mind at rest. So when we stop trying to control it, when we stop trying to understand it, once we realize that it's ungraspable, and then instead what we've been doing today, which is just observe it, be curious about it, maybe gossip about it, right? Appreciate it, which is what I found most of you, not all of you, but most of you doing, being frustrated by it. You know, there's that separate. It's like we're not trying to grasp it. We're just, it's like the curiosity has come through. And let's take it to the next level. The only way out is through. And this quote has been credited with so many different people. We don't know who said it first. But I want you to just go nuts right now. I want you to just become it and think all you want. Not try to understand it, not trying to control it, not trying to grasp it. I just want you to become your mind right now and let it do its thing. And let's spend at least a minute in silence, just letting the mind do its thing. Chatter away, monkey out, do whatever it's going to do, which is what I've been doing for the last year. Indulge it. Indulge in it. Go. Who wants to tell me what your experience just was?
I can tell you what I experienced.
Go ahead.
So, basically, if I let my mind go blank, so I think we're trying to do, just having a discussion with the mind, whatever. I have some.
Hold on. Let me just stop you. No, that's the opposite.
Yeah, you said you wanted to have a discussion with the mind. Is that right? Or
no. What we were doing was the opposite. We weren't, because letting your mind go blank is a form of control.
Mm-hmm.
We were indulging it, letting it do whatever it wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was doing that anyways.
Excellent.
And I have some outside influences on my physical being here, which are not pleasant. And then it just started to focus on that stuff. So these are physical injuries.
So it started thinking about injuries, pain, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the pain like reared its ugly head. Exactly.
Okay. And so did it change? I mean, we were a little over a minute. Did it maintain? Did it just, I mean, I think what I'm hearing you say is that by doing this exercise, it made the pain worse?
I won't say it made it worse. It made it more easily recognized.
Have you been ignoring the pain? And by doing this exercise, then the mind was like, hey, you know, David, like, check this out. You've been ignoring this pain. Like, tell me more about what happened.
Yeah, no, I haven't been ignoring it. It is what it is. And it's a temporary pain. It'll go away in, 4 or 5 months, I hope. But anyways, no, I haven't been ignoring it. I think what happens is if I don't have distraction, like talking, thinking, it kind of fills the void.
Gotcha. Okay. And how did the mind play a role in you being aware of that pain?
Well, it plays the role in that if the mind is working, it, basically turns on the pain. It recognizes the pain.
Is that a good thing to you, or is that a bad thing to you? Of course, we're very
realistic. Let me think about that. Is it a good thing, or is it bad? The mind is working. Well, it's a bad thing. I don't like the pain, but it's a thing. How about that? It's a thing.
How is it also a good thing?
Well, lets me know I'm alive, I guess.
It's also an opportunity for you to be intimate with the pain instead of ignoring the pain.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Anybody else? What was your experience?
My experience was it was quiet. The room was quiet, and I allowed the mind to do whatever it wanted to do, and it was quiet. So I think maybe I should let the mind just be on its own a little bit more instead of trying to control it.
You know, it's interesting. In this last year, I mentioned that I just let my mind just do whatever it was going to do. I indulged it, and it wound up being a torturous year as a result. And yet the only way out is through. And I really felt like the mind just really needed that indulgence. And there's a problem that comes from it, which I got vertigo, and it was just this bowling ball thing that I told you about. But the other thing is that it kept me in the relationship with Kirk, just long enough so that it wasn't such a shock to my system to just all of a sudden be without him so abruptly. And it's like there's some great things that come from the mind, and but if you just let it do its thing, it eventually runs its course. It always does. Did anybody else have the experience of it's starting off really busy, and then over the course of the minute and a half, it just started running out of things to say.
Kristen, I'm not sure if it's just me, but there's a weird noise happening.
Yeah, I hear it too.
I hear it as well. Is it preventing you from being able to hear my voice or the other speakers' voices?
No,
it's just, yeah, I hear everybody voice. Loud and clear as well.
Yeah, it's just kind of a background hum.
Yeah. Well, let me see if there's anything I can do.
Do you have like a printer or a fan on in your room?
No, I hear it too. It's in my room, but it's not very loud. You know what it is? It's my computer is super hot.
It sounds like ohm to me.
Yeah. My computer is, the fan is whirling furiously because the computer is super hot.
That's better.
That's better?
I put it on
the surface. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's gone.
Is it getting better?
It's gone.
Okay, good. So, did anybody else have the experience that if you just let the mind speak and indulged it and let it run amok, that it started to run out of things to say?
Yeah, so I guess for me, my experience was that I was aware of the resistance of doing that. It's almost like I was trying to control it, but I was aware of it at least. And I can see the difference between letting the story run without awareness and let our mind do its thing, but being aware of it. I can see how that is much better for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we try to control it so much and we're taught to do it. And, you know, the whole concept of creating your own reality and control your mind. I mean, there's so many sayings about that. Train your brain, train your thoughts, train your mind, create your reality. And yet we never think to do the opposite. Like if you have a wild horse, best to put it out to pasture and let it do its thing. You know, if you have a bull, you know, give it a lot of space, right? And so the exercise that we're doing is just giving it space. And what I found when I was doing it is that there weren't thoughts. Like my mind wasn't doing thoughts. It was just kind of like energy. And it was just erratic and crazy. And then the reason why I went over a minute is because after a minute, it was still kind of going crazy. And then it started to break up. Like it had like holes and like Swiss cheese, and all of a sudden there were holes, and it was became porous and it became mushy and then it dissolved. And that's when I'm like, all right, hopefully everybody had that same experience with me, because that was awesome. Because I haven't had that many experiences of that in the last year, except for when I consciously do the exercise that I just facilitated with you guys. And so everyone had their own unique experience. But if you can learn how to do this, you know, the only way out is through. To study the mind is to forget the mind. It's just really a great practice. I mean, it just changes everything. And that's kind of the centerpiece for what I wanted us to explore today. And I think it's the centerpiece of what Dogen Zenji was trying to capture in his quote. So where we are now, by studying your mind, and maybe not you, Glenda, because you were trying to control it. You've calmed it down. And I do this in the middle of the night. If I wake up, actually just an hour ago, I tried to take a nap and I was, you know, my mind was calm, but I like checked it out. I'm like, okay, mind, are you going to keep me awake? No. But then my fear woke me up and it's like, it's always fear or it's always my mind. It's those two guys really that can become real problems for us all. And so you want to give it a big pasture when it shows up with fear, of course. You know what I teach about fear. You want to just let it be, spend some time loving it, letting it do its thing. Same with the mind. So to study the mind is to forget the mind. You know, to spend some time with the mind, all of a sudden it just calms down. And instead of a storm, you know, like you're on the surface of the ocean in a storm with enormous, heavy, stressful waves just coming at you and smacking you in the face and just, you know, chaos, where you're just fighting for survival, you know, when you're going through trauma, and maybe you guys aren't, and I have the last year, I'm not anymore, I'm in a much better place, but by just weathering the storm and letting it do its thing, it's now kind of not such strong waves for me. And when you do that, instead of just fighting for survival, when you go through your storms, you can let it do its thing and it turns into little waves. And then once that happens, there's room for another experience besides just fighting for your life anymore. Now it's like insanity, that insane mind, there's always waves. You know, that's why back then during Buddha's era, it was called the insane mind, the little mind that I'm calling it now, or the delusional mind, the small mind. And sometimes, like, there's always waves, and sometimes the waves are really big, and sometimes the waves are just little. And know, as we continue on this journey together tonight, like, the next moment of insanity is always just a little or a big storm away, and it'll build up energy, like your mind will build up energy like a tea kettle that will at some point need to release a flurry of noise again. It's going to happen, right? But for now, we're going to explore now how this mind can also be used as a tool to set you free or to hit the pause button, right? Knowing you can always come back later, and you will come back later, or it'll kind of take over you later, like a tsunami. But use it now, today, right now, in this moment, to go on a journey to study one of life's greatest mysteries, and use it to take you into deeper depths and swim down beneath the waves. We're going to give the mind a very specific job, which is ask it, what else is there besides it? What else is there besides it? So basically, there's the mind, which we've been talking about, gossiping about, observing, letting it run wild. Like, there's the mind. And if you only listen to it, like I have in the last year, it's like playing a guitar and only knowing one chord, or only playing like one string. And there's so many other strings. So there's the mind, and then there's all other things. It's literally two different realities. It's a different form of dualism. Like, there's mind and then there's no mind, right? It's like there's this cousin to the mind. It's a completely different instrument. And we've talked about this other mind, which isn't a mind after all, but actually a no mind, like non-mind, or the one who's free from mind. And while we tend to live our lives generated by our minds, just know that animals don't. And we're back to kind of the Taoism, like being one with nature. Animals are one with nature. Animals don't live their life generated by their minds. They live their life generated by awareness. So in the last few minutes we have, can you sit in a state of awareness now of non-mind, or the one who's transcended mind? And it's that part of you that's been observing the mind this whole time. And so shift into that reality. And we're just going to spend a few moments. You're going to be in silence. I'm going to speak to you gently. Close your eyes if it helps. And if you ever have caught yourself saying, my mind is driving me crazy, or I wish my mind would shut up, or I wish I could get out of my mind, just notice who is saying that. It's not the mind. Who is noticing this insanity, this disturbance, maybe in the middle of the night? Who is the you that has been observing the mind? Who is the you that is not your mind? Who is the image of you in the mirror? Who is the one that goes skiing? or answers to the name that your parents gave you. And as you're sitting here, like the mind has judgment, but your awareness, do you have judgment? Or are you free from judgment? And once we get into this place, there's a lot of koans, Zen riddles, if you were to study them. There's about 1,200 of them. And there are always a conversation between a master and a student. I'm not a Zen master, I'm a student. But imagine a master given cape by a student. And the student says, well, tell me, master, do you eat cake with the mind of the past, the mind of the future, the mind of the present? And the master shrugs and says, and this is from your reality, I eat cake with my mouth. Notice how simple you are. And so as you're sitting here, being the one who's observing this, and you're not it. I'm reminded of a story of a wave that's living his life in the ocean, because we've been talking about waves a lot. And then he looks up and realizes that he's headed towards this black, rocky shore, and all of his wave buddies are crashing against the shore, and they're just dissolving into nothingness. And you think, oh my gosh, I'm going to die, right? You know, it's like the mind doesn't want to die. And so the mind's like backing up, no, no, no. And then one of the other waves explained, no, 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 this is the greatest moment of your life. You're just one wave. You're just one mind. And when you crash against those rocks, you're going to be part of the whole. And so with that, the wave crashed against the rocky shore, became part of the whole. So notice that the place where you are, you include the mind. And you include all minds. And I was talking to Glenn before. He said, you know, this is where poetry comes from. And I think he was talking from the perspective of you. So the question I asked him is the mind the thing that captures it, or is the mind the thing that creates it? So are you, as the one that's observing the mind, as you're sitting here, can you capture the mind and all it has to offer? Do you create the mind? So many questions. So in finale, like this is our finale, like look at the mind and notice that it's both the cause of suffering, including judgments, dualism, but it's also the tool that we can use to end suffering and dive down deep and access a place where you're just naturally free from judgment and dualism. The mind is insane on the one hand, but by honoring it, it turns from a tyrant into a guide that you can rely on to take you, should you choose to, go on the journey to a place of sanity. So how you make this happen? Dogen Zenji, to study Buddhism is to study the self or the mind. To study Buddhism is to study the mind. To study the mind is to forget the mind. To forget the mind is to be enlightened by all things, by all minds. The only way out is through. And then I have some practical observations to leave you with. When you can't sleep or when that mind is going crazy, just observe, but don't identify with it. And observing and not identifying with fear, you know, observing and identifying not with the mind, right? You're not it, it's not you, is the solution to almost every problem that you have. Not trying to control the outer world or losing yourself to it, but just noticing the inner world and not identifying with it. It's like, don't try to control that inner world or calm it down. Don't try to control your mind or calm it down. Just listen to it, observe it. Offer it a penthouse suite or a stage so you can see it objectively and you keep tabs on it and you get to know it better and better and better, which is, even though this has been a torturous year, it has been fascinating to get to know my mind better. And how I honored it when it became super chatty is I just let it do its thing for a whole year. Like, go nuts. Keep me safe and protected and secure from what's happening around me. So it actually, even though it was torturous and had a bowling ball head for a while, it actually worked out. And every once in a while, what I did and what I'm hoping you can do, what you're doing right now, which you probably already do, is with a shift, also dilute it from time to time when you can with a bigger mind or same mind experiences. But don't expect to stay here forever, like where you are right now. And why would we want to? We want to go back to the self. So the better goal is always the conscious apex, where you both include and embrace both the sane mind and the insane mind, both the one that's observing the mind and the mind itself, where we embrace both the surface of the ocean and all the depths underneath. This is the balance that you're going for. And remember, on the surface of the ocean, there may be a lot of storms, and other times it's calm, but there's always going to be waves. But underneath, it's also always very quiet and peaceful and calm and just enormous, huge, like endless wisdom. And keep practicing this and know both, get to know both, so that the whole ocean becomes available to you. And that's our practice today. Any questions or comments?
I have one question. From this place of big mind, what is intuition? Who is intuit? Who is intuiting?
You know, the thing about being in a big mind place, you don't have any questions. You just are. So first notice who's asking the question. And we're back to our minds. And the question is like trying to make insanity sane. Like, if I could understand what intuition is, then maybe I could have it more often. And so the first part is noticing who's asking the question, and then also noticing why you're asking the question. So let me ask you that. Why do you ask that question?
Curious. Curiosity.
Are you trying to tap into it more?
Yes.
I would say that intuition is the big mind perspective, which comes from intimacy with all things. I've always taught that, in my experience, intimacy with fear leads to intuition and instinct. Whenever you have intimacy with any of the 10,000 minds, including just the mind that we've been talking about, it's odd, you transcend the mind and you become something else. More about awareness. And I feel like awareness and
we got lost sound here.
Yeah,
I think we lost it. Yeah.
We can't hear you anymore, Kristen.
Thing about awareness is boop, bye.
Cliffhanger. Hang tight and hopefully she'll come back to us. Kristen, can you hear us?
So I don't know if Glenn, you said anything. I may have lost you. We've had some.
We lost you after you said the thing about intuition is, and then you cut out.
The whole thing?
Yes.
Oh,
I'm sure it was really good.
I don't think I could recreate it.
The comment was the thing about awareness is.
And then yes.
Oh, okay. So you got the whole who's asking a question.
Yes.
Okay. Let's do this. Glenn, I mean, we haven't worked together. I don't know how much voice dialogue we've done together. But allow me, please, to speak to the voice of intuition. Who am I speaking to? And just say the voice of intuition.
The voice of intuition.
Okay. So just be the voice of intuition. You're not the one that's trying to figure out what you are or where you come from. You're just the voice of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Now just tell us where you come from or how to access you.
I am the voice of intuition. I come from feminine essence of the collective unconscious, and I live in a world of metaphor, symbols, and signs that are placed in proximity of awareness to playfully engage the notion of ultimate possibility.
Very poetic. Is that a borrowed answer or did that just come through you?
That just came through me.
So Glenn has his answer. Any other questions?
Yeah, I've got a question. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. It was fascinating for me that you said that you had a lot of internal dialogue with Kirk this past year. You said that you still really kind of that ran through your mind a lot. Is that correct?
Yes, it was a way to keep me in a relationship with him, which is what I needed to do to just kind of ease myself out of it.
See, I relate to that so much. So it's kind of like asking for a friend here. Is that useful? I mean, it seems to me that it's kind of blocked me from actually genuine intimacy with someone. If I just kind of have an imaginary commitment with them.
Well, you know, that's why we've been exploring this. It's like, I don't know what your process has been. So if you can study the mind, if you can observe it and indulge it.
Well, that's all I do is indulge it. I just let it run and it runs all the time. So that's one of the things that really interests me about your practice was the idea that I should be able to tune into my body more and have a felt sense of the emotions and stuff like that. But I haven't really been consistent with that. But I think that would be useful.
Whenever we say that we should do something,
it's bad.
Yeah, we're like not in a Zen experience. It's like, you know, I'll tell you about my own experience and maybe you can relate. I indulged my mind. I saw it running amok. It took over me. I let it take over me. It became my whole everything. It's almost all I experienced, that and fear. And I just rode those waves. It was super violent and emotionally volatile and all that. And I didn't sleep. And so because I did that, rather than thinking I should be over it by now. And let me tell you, it was hard because all of my friends were like, aren't you over this yet? I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like my friends just really wanted me to rush through the process and be okay and be like, I am warm and hear me roar. Like, I got this. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, it needed to run its course. And I honestly, I mean, I went through something that is a little bit different than, pretty more intense than even most divorces. I mean, not all divorces are as hard as mine. I would say I'm top, 10% of just suckiness of, I won't get into the details of that, but to have gotten through the other side of it in 13 months blows my mind. Okay. And I think that the reason why I moved through it so fast is because there was never part of me that ever thought I should. I should be over it by now. And then it just kind of, it literally like a switch flipped in the middle of the night one night when I woke up yet again, just monkey minding out. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, I'm done. And I just honored my fear. And does it still come back? Absolutely. Usually if I hear from him. And then, there's a lot more going on too. My mom is now in diapers. Both my cats were killed. I got in a horrible car accident. My other mom died of cancer in January. It's not just been Kirk. It's been the whole thing. And there's something called the dark night of the soul. And I'm just starting to explore this, but it's kind of a rite of passage for people when all of a sudden just you're handed just one thing after another, after another, after another, that's just torture. And it's here to enhance your growth. And it's like sometimes like a forest fire needs to ravage a hillside to break open buried seeds that have a really thick shell and coating. And like this experience is going to, it's like a forest fire that just broke me. It literally broke me. And now I'm finally starting to blossom a little bit. And it's like I'm about to go through the actual divorce process, and I'm okay. I'm okay now. I think I'm going to be okay. And so I don't know where you are in your process, but I don't know how long it's been, but if you can just let it be rather than try to let it go or that you should be something else, eventually you'll get there. And I think that having the bigger mind perspective and shifting into that from time to time, just to have a little droplet of it, just go down into the depths where it's calm for just a second, you'll pop right back up like a cork. But, I think that just that reminder can be really helpful as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, I don't want to say too much when you've been through so much that it's amazing. So I'm glad that things are working out for you. I appreciate you taking the time with us.
Well, thank you. And I bow to you guys. And I'll talk to you in a month.
All right. Thank you.